Hello and welcome to WrestleWolf Brother Dudes and Dudettes. This is your AEW Dynamite recap and review. I'm your host, Dr. Damien Gibson, DMD. And I was pretty bloody critical of AEW for maybe the first time since they started last week. I think I was also in a bit of a bad mood, but that doesn't excuse the poor booking that happened on Dynamite last week. I was highly critical of the booking. TK responded by having the 4-on-4 tag match of the Super Elite versus Lucha Express. It sounds like a supermarket, like a small version of a supermarket. I don't know if you guys have those where you are, but we have like Coles and Woolworths are like the two major chains, and they have these little express stores, especially in the city center downtown for our American listeners. Yeah, they're like tiny little supermarkets, but everything costs like four times as much. That's what Lucha Express sounds like. Christian and the main man, Bryan Danielson, in this match. I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but I did say that I will just keep pointing out JR when he annoys me until something's done about it. He's just getting more annoying by the week. He doesn't shut the fuck up over, like, he fills gaps that don't need to be filled. I'm spending more time trying to think about what it is that actually annoys me. And I think last week I landed on him talking over the top of, like, you know, Bryan Danielson's entrance music or Adam Cole, baby, or whatever it is. And I don't know. I'm also trying to come to terms with, like, why he does it. Because I can't even, no one else really does it. And I can't imagine that Tony Khan is telling him to do it. But I think there's so much reverence for JR that he does whatever he wants. I mean, you can see the way the CM Punk talks about him when he's on commentary, that everybody has this reverence for JR, which I did until he came to AEW, and then basically at times seems to feel the same way about the product as like Jim Cornette does. If you don't know how Jim Cornette, you may not know who Jim Cornette is. But if you do, then you know. Otherwise, he's very disparaging of AEW. Why am I explaining this? That was obvious in what I was saying. Anyway, it's not all negative with JR this week, but it just really is becoming really quite frustrating. And I actually look forward to Rampage more, even though I think basically they're on a equal footing as far as the product is concerned, because JR's not on commentary. And it doesn't do me any pleasure to keep bitching about this every week. I just feel like I'm going crazy. I feel like I'm the only person noticing this. Maybe I pay more attention to commentators than other people, you know. Anyway. With the help of Nick and Matt, Jungle Boy just hung on the top rope on his feet for about 10 minutes in this match. I mean, the balance of this kid is out of control. The crowd in Pittsburgh are hot, which is nice. It's a nice change from last week as well. Although they weren't, you know, to be fair to last week's crowd, the product was not great. It was a botched spot that was meant to look like a neck injury for Christian that took me out of it a little bit. I always worry when I write notes like that down and then find out that, you know, they actually did sustain an injury, which may have been the case. It just didn't look, it looked very innocuous while I'm talking to you guys, I'm going to quickly look this up and make sure that Christian doesn't have a major injury, because I'm going to worry about, I'm going to worry about it. Nah, it was a spot. Now that I know that, I can go full ball. It just didn't look that Nick Jackson didn't hit the tombstone properly. And so, you know, Christian was meant to be out because of it. And yeah, I don't know. It just took me out of it a little bit. Matt Jackson's super kick to Marco Stunt was brutal. They've been doing this for the last 2 years. Marco Stunt takes a bump, maybe better than anybody in the in the company. That doesn't mean I want to see him start wrestling Tony. Just putting that out there. So anyway, there was a whole bunch of fantastic action, which led up to a face-off between Bryan Danielson and Kenny Omega. The crowd pop for this was huge. Notice that Bryan's added a flying headbutt to his arsenal in this match. JR apologizes for using a cliche. I'm not sure why he is saying he is one. This was a fantastic match to finish with a four-way BTE trigger on Jungle Boy. I have one slight criticism, and that's that there was a lot of tag team wrestling. Now I'm going to sound like Jim Cornette after bagging JR for doing the same thing. But I agree with them on this. There's a lot of tag team wrestling in this match where you had to have 4 to 5 people in the ring, and there's no DQs or anything. It just feels a little bit like cheating to have a spot fest. And I'm not saying the spot fests aren't enjoyable. I'm not saying that these guys aren't fantastic wrestlers, but the chain wrestling, like spot after spot after spot, is exciting, but I think you could maybe just pull it back a little bit. I know that's what the Bucks do really well, and I assume that they had a fair bit to do with putting this match together. It feels like a Bucks kind of match. I know no one wants to watch 80s wrestling, like just big fat guys in doing rest holds. I get that. I understand that those days are gone. But I feel like you could maybe just have a little bit more self-restraint with the amount of spots. But anyway, look, it's a very small criticism. There was just a couple of moments in the match where I was like, oh, God, seriously. I mean, we could probably have someone stand behind a rope and hang on to the tag rope, but just at some point in the match. But it was a fantastic spectacle, and I did really enjoy it after all that. But next up, we had John Moxley promo. Actually, with that, the Elite got the win here. It's kind of a simmer match where it just sort of raises the stakes of Adam Cole and Jungle Boy and Bryan Danielson and Kenny Omega a little bit. Super entertaining though, and fantastic to get this Dynamite off with a bang compared to last week. John Moxley says does a promo saying that he's insane from tiredness. He's got a three month baby at home, but he's coming for the belt. He's going to win the ladder match later on in the show. I don't usually like to talk about this stuff on this podcast. I'm trying to make it more and more upbeat, stop whinging less, and try and have a bit more fun with it, because wrestling is fun. If it's not fun, why the fuck are we watching it? You know what I mean? But I'd been having a really tough time from a mental health perspective the last week and a half. And seeing CM Punk come into the ring and Pittsburgh's reaction to it and how happy he is made me happy. Like it took me out of that funk. You know, it really did. I mean, not forever, but and then JR and Tony talked all over the fucking top of it again and ruined the moment. They seem incapable of being able to just let the story tell the picture, which is interesting, because when you read JR's book, that's what he bangs on about, how good he is at doing that. Anyway, Punk ruined the kayfabe. It was only a matter of time before someone did this. I'm going to wrestle someone tonight when actually they're going to wrestle. I'm going to wrestle tonight on Rampage. Is another little bugbear that I know I bring up every week, that Dynamite and Rampage are filmed at the same time. I know logistically it makes sense, but it was only a matter of time before this happened. I didn't think it would be CM Punk that would do it. But anyway, he cut a good CM Punk promo. Then pointed out the shoes that he got. He did a big sneaker runner YouTube channel that he was on. And he got some Jordans, and he gave them to a kid in the front row, who was dressed as Orange Cassidy. Tony, just saying. And he completely redeemed himself by doing that. I know he would have got the shoes for free, but he could have held on to them. So giving them away is a very nice thing for him to do. There's an interesting vignette here where Arn has broken into Cody Rhodes' house. I think he stole a suit, because at some point here in the promo, Cody, like when Cody comes down, so just to set the scene, Arn's in Cody's either front or backyard, I'm not sure. He's got a big barrel with fire coming out of it, and he's set a suit on fire because Cody's like, come on, man, that's a really expensive suit. Then he gets, so Arn gets angry at Cody when Cody comes down to find out what he's doing. He slaps Cody across the face and says that, you know, you're a terrible wrestler at the moment and blah, 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 blah. And I didn't mind this. This is the kind of vignette that I know most wrestling fans these days will screw their nose up at. You know, like, oh, it's not in the arena and it's a little bit corny. And but I'm at the point in my life where I'm sick of ironic, like I'm sick of irony. I'm sick of people not actually putting themselves on the line and saying, this is what I've created and you can judge it either way. I'm kind of sick of this get out clause with everything of like, yeah, well, you know, it was ironic, or I like wrestling ironically, or, you know, I kind of like rock and roll wrestling ironically. I'm kind of really sick of that. And I like this. I thought this was like, it's an honest promo from Arn. Like he, you know, I feel like they were allowed to do their creative, and this is what they came up with, and I liked it. You know, it got me back on board with Cody, because there was a part of me that's like, well, fucking Arn's broken into his house. I kind of agree with Cody here. So like, what are you doing, man? But then by the end of the promo, Arn's like, you got to wise up, dude. You know, you're sitting in your giant mansion, you're buying these, you know, $10,000 suits, blah, 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 blah. It's Rocky. You know, it's Rocky 3, where he's out of touch with his the thing that he loves. You know, he thinks he is, but he's not. And Arn's going to be the person to show that to him. I just hope he stays away from Malakai Black. There is a match between Sammy Guevara and Bobby Fish. I'm not keen to talk about this. I'm not happy about Bobby Fish being on the AEW roster. You know, people are entitled to their views to a point, I think. Once you start straying off into dangerous conspiracy theories, then I don't have any time for that, and so I'm not going to be spending any time shedding any light on him. Sammy wins the match, and then Dan Lambert and his UFC meatheads come out and beat Sammy down. Jericho is back with Hagar, speaking of conspiracy theorists, nut chums. And I'm not coming back from that. He's with Hagar. They chase the meatheads off, which is a little unbelievable, seeing that there's like 14 MMA fighters in the ring. And Jericho and Hager come down there, you know. Anyway, Lambert cuts a promo and gets booed out of the building. This is going to be another one of those situations where everyone goes, oh, man, the heat that Dan Lambert's getting. And it's like, I don't think AEW fans want to see, you know, the heroes of MAGA voters on their wrestling product, you know. And I feel like they let TK know about it. You know, I think like having the Bobby Fish match and then this straight after it was enough for people to be like, ah, fuck, man. Like, no, this is not what this company is. The Acclaim cut a promo. I mean, it's not going to stop them from doing it, because Jericho obviously wants to, and Hager, you know, want to do stuff with Top Team. I think the point of it is to try and get the Men of the Year over. I think that's getting lost a little bit. Anyway, the Acclaim let us know that they'll be taking on the Lucha Bros for the tag titles on Rampage, because they're the number one contenders as far as rankings are concerned, which is good. I'm looking forward to that match. I would be amazed if the Acclaim win the belts off the Lucha Bros, but Tony announces the TBS championship belt. which will be the mid-card belt for the women's division, which super cool with that. That's great. It will force them to do more. Well, hopefully it will force them to do more female storylines because there's now two belts. So they have to do at least two female storylines. Although later on in the show, Britt Baker came out and was like, oh, great. Well, now I don't have to do anything. You guys can all fight it out for this belt. So no. Next up, we had a great promo with JR. Now, this is where I was talking where it's not all negative with JR. When he does these interview vignettes, he, because of his experience and because he, you know, I mean, he's just good at them. I mean, when he is amazing at putting wrestlers over in these one-on-one, you know, quote, serious, unquote, one-on-one interviews. And he did that here with Darby, bringing up his uncle, which MJF brought up last week. He was in a car accident where his uncle died, who'd been drink driving. I genuinely thought this was fantastic work. And it's what can happen when you're prepared to tell stories with some honesty in wrestling, which AEW do all the time. This isn't having a go at AEW, but yeah, just great stuff. Next up, Darby accounts for Nick Comorado in a pretty swift fashion. QT Marshall jumps in the ring and hits a DDT on Sting. Sting sits straight back up and hits a Scorpion Death Drop on QT, which is nice to see. Hopefully we won't see QT ever again. Dark Order have a quick promo to say they're all on the same page. Yay. Dante Martin's in the ring. He says he can take on anyone. The lights go black. Malakai Black is in the ring. Black Mist, roundhouse kick to the head. Lights go black. They come back on. Dante Martin is on the floor. And Malakai Black says he accepts. This was interesting because I thought they were going to do some more spooky, as everybody loves to say, word. When the lights came back on and Dante Martin was not there. I was like, oh, wow, this is getting sort of Undertaker-y. And then they purposely showed that he was just on the floor. So I was like, okay, that's interesting. It felt like it was sort of, you know, flag in the dirt moment of like, look, we're going to have characters that are a bit to the left of center. You know, we've got Malakai Black, we've got Abaddon, we may have Bray Wyatt in the future, but we're not gonna have lights go off, lights come back on, people disappear. We're not going to have people drag through the ring. You know, that may change, but it feels like that's where they're at the moment. Next up is Ricky Starks. Just before we go through this episode... No, I'll talk about it at the end. Ricky Starks is in the ring on the mic. He says that Brian Cage didn't show up to work and that he would have challenged him to a street fight. Cage's music hits. He runs down from the stage. Starts to try and beat on Ricky Starks. Team Taz are there. They drag him out of the ring. You know, that story's just bubbling along. We get a nice promo from some of the girls about the TBS belt tournament. This was great. We had Thunder Rosa and Ruby Soho in this. Jay Cargill, Sky Blue. Yeah, great. Next up, we had Hikaru Shida versus Serena Deeb. Hikaru did a spinning front face airplane drop that was fantastic in this match. Some great technical wrestling in this, especially from Serena Deeb. Nice little story to Shida's knee, which led to Serena Deeb winning with a knee lock. And then Serena using Hikaru's trophy to smash her over the head with it, basically. It's a heel turn for Serena Deeb, which had kind of been happening for a long time, but she's now officially a heel. I really like both of these girls, and I want to see more wrestling from both of them. Darby Allin is on the way out of the arena. He gets beaten down by a bunch of guys in balaclavas. It's the pinnacle. And then they drive off. And then what was interesting about this is that later on in the ladder match, it was announced that Darby is not cleared to compete next week. I really like that. It just feels more real. Next up, we get a promo from Leo Rush, who's going to be a manager which I don't feel like was spelt out last week. Maybe I'm a bit slow, but this is really interesting. He wants to manage Dante Martin, which I think is a fantastic move. Leo Rush is a great talker, fantastic talker, and he showed that in this promo, which also makes sense for last week's promo. So there was a part of me that should have held off a little bit, trusted the process a bit more, as Sidgwick would say. But I think this could be really good with Leo Rush's talking, Dante Martin's in ring ability. I'm a lot more excited about both of them together. Britt Baker says that she'll be watching the tournament for the TBS title. So I don't know. I feel like we're getting a bit of a break from Britt. Don't know if that's the smartest thing in the world, but anyway. And we're at the main event, ladies and gentlemen. The ladder match is up next. I know Orange Cassidy got a pretty good run in this match, but I'm not liking how he's being used. I mean, coming out with a basketball mascot for, I think it's the Philadelphia 76ers, it just, I don't know, it just reeks of him not being taken seriously, him being sort of the mascot of AEW. It's, anyway. Pac must have got a jab because he's in this match. Elmer Fudd's on it, at it again on the comms. They're just stuttering all over the place. And then things started to get good. Pac slides the ladder into the match. Orange Cassidy slides it back out. Andrade's the next contestant. He looks fantastic. He does a jump from the top rope, onto the ladder, fairly fire up the ladder as well. Then hits a powerbomb from one side of the ladder to the next. On Pac, it's just huge. Matt Hardy's here. I mean, he really looked out of place. You know, I know I get fixated on things, but I mean, if you watch this match, and this match is truly fantastic, it might be my favorite, it's definitely one of my favorite matches of the year. The cage match at All Out between the Young Bucks and Lucha Bros and Britt and Thunder's Lights Out match are probably my three favorite matches so far of the year. I'd love this, but there was one person who was just not contributing, and it's because he can't. It's not that Matt Hardy's terrible at wrestling or, you know, is a dickhead or anything like that. It's just he physically can't do the things that he used to do. And I know it's hard for people to let go of things, but it just, when you compare this to the other wrestlers that were in this match, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, there were 5 other wrestlers in the match. You may have the 5 best in-ring workers outside of Danielson and Kenny Omega in the world in this match. And then there was Matt Hardy. And it was a bit sad because he just wasn't contributing. Anyway, he's out here. There was a I forgot about Lance Archer. There's a confusing spot when he comes out, who's out here now. He's got one of the ring crew with him, like Jake the Snake brings out. Jake the Snake's back, by the way, guys. He picks him up, throws him at Andrade. Andrade ducks. I don't know, it just sort of seemed pointless. Moxley's out here next. Archer meets John Moxley in the crowd, and they start beating the hell out of each other. And that's fun. There's a lot of brutal stuff going on here. The Joker is next, and it is Hangman Page. What a fucking pop this was. I didn't realize that there was so much online chatter about him being buried or going to WWE. That's not going to happen, guys. He's best mates with the EVPs. He's not going anywhere. And there's a thing in AEW called long-term storytelling. So if someone is off air, which his wife was having a baby, so someone's gone for 3 weeks or so, that's why. It's a different company. It's not, you know, there's a different person running this company than Vince McMahon at WWE. So if someone's gone for a couple of weeks and they're at the top of the card, it doesn't mean that you're never going to see them again. But I can understand that reaction because it's been happening for 40 years. So anyway, Hangman gets the ring, he takes out Mox, then he takes out Archer, then Orange Cassidy, then Andrade, then Hardy. Pac arrives, hits him with a chair, and then they reference the fact that that Pac and Hangman have had beef, and it's been ongoing for a long period of time. And these are the little things that, and it's usually brought up by Excalibur, these are the little things, the little storytelling things that make a huge difference and make the story world of AEW feel way more fleshed out than any other promotion on earth, which is difficult for them to do with the amount of people that they've got on the roster now, but it's done really well. There was a huge bump from here where Hangman Page took Pac up to the top of a 15-foot ladder and drops him through a table. Then Mox hits a paradigm shift on Hangman. Hardy is outside. He hits a leg drop on Orange Cassidy just to keep that story bubbling along, even though no one wants to see it. And we're now with Hangman and Mox at the top of the rungs after all this brutality. They're at the top of the rungs on either side of a ladder. They're trading blows. And then I could see people saying this is anticlimactic, but I didn't mind it. Mox just drops off the ladder after being punched in the face a bunch of times. And the new number one contender is Hangman Adam Page. And this story, the Hangman Page story, is... I mean, there's been a lot made of it by a lot of different people, but it really is, if you wanted to explain to people why you love AEW from a storytelling point of view, then Hangman Page's arc is the perfect place to start. You know, being ostracized from the four EVPs, he was in the first championship match, he lost to Chris Jericho, so he had to learn the hard way that you can't just swoop in and be the hot young star. Then he tagged with Kenny forever, and then they split up, and he's had no confidence because he was ostracized by the Elite again, and then he found some confidence by becoming friends with the Dark Order, but then has decided that he has to do this on his own because, you know, he can't rely on other people to make his dreams come true. He needs to do it himself, and this is the first step of that. The storytelling with Hangman Page has been phenomenal. And he's legitimately a star. And that was, I think, what I really enjoyed about this episode of Dynamite, is there's a lot of talk about the four pillars. And I think you can kind of pick and choose which young stars you want to put in those spots. You know, Hangman Page, Ricky Starks, Orange Cassidy, there's others that are slipping my mind right now. MJF, of course. Darby Allin. But Hangman Page, out of that whole group of about 8, 9, 10 young wrestlers that they've got that could be anything, Hangman Page feels like the legitimate star. You know, he's such a handsome dude. He's amazing. He's fantastic in ring. He looks great. You know, and then he's got that everyman thing. You know, especially in the States, that sort of loner cowboy thing works well, but also is, you know, he's the anxious millennial cowboy. I think that resonates with people. The same way that Orange Cassidy's kind of lackadaisical millennial Gen Z kind of like, what's the point, resonates with people. I think Hangman Page is the same. So, yeah, I was so much happier watching Dynamite this week. This is the AEW that I know and love. Fantastic show. I mean, if I was giving it a mark, it'd be a 8.7 out of 10. Yeah, really enjoyed it. Really, really, really enjoyed it. I'm really looking forward to Rampage as well. We've got Daniel Garcia versus CM Punk. I know your Sir Matthew Kayfabe will be super excited about that match. Lucha Bros versus The Acclaimed. That should bang. There were a couple other matches as well where I was like, Jesus Christ, that's stacked for an hour show. But I cannot remember them off the top of my head. But you'll get to hear me talk about them all on Saturday on our Rampage recap and review. But I'm going to leave it there, guys, because this is probably long enough. Just a reminder that Matt and I will be doing one of our famous drafts. I was going to try and give it a clever name, but it doesn't really. It's just the WrestleWolf draft. Basically, we have a promotion each, a new promotion. All the wrestlers on Earth go into a giant pool, and then we can pick 15 male, 10 female, and 10 tag teams to start our promotion. It's kind of like a state of the nation sort of thing of where we see, it's like our version of PW1 Insiders 500, and we try and do one every year. Matt sits around, like he messaged me this morning and was writing up his spreadsheet. I just pick off the hip. So it's, we have very different ways of going about it. I think this year I'm going to try and really pick from my heart. I think last year I tried to pick with my head a little bit because I just want to see what kind of bizarre, fucked up promotion I end up with. It's like Malakai Black, Bray Wyatt, Nick Gage, like Matt Cardona, Warhorse, Danhausen. Anyway. We'll see what ends up. Evil from New Japan. Whereas Matt's will be like, you know, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan. Anyway, he's going to have to get those before I get them. We're recording that Saturday morning, so hoping to have that out Saturday night, Australian time. So that'll be Saturday morning for our Indian, American, basically all of our other listeners outside of Australia and New Zealand. Anyway, until next time, brother dudes and dudettes, may your wrestling be good wrestling, and good night. Mwah.